Welcome and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. On this week's episode, NAHU's Marcy Buckner and John Green recap the past several weeks since NAHU's Capitol Conference, including the reintroduction of several pieces of legislation related to NAHU's federal priorities. We'll look at continuing the suspension of the health insurance tax, a full repeal of the Cadillac tax, fixing Medicare's two-midnight rule, our efforts to oppose the newly introduced Medicare for All bill, and the latest announcements coming from the Trump administration. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and to rate us. The podcast is posted every Friday on these platforms ahead of being distributed through NAHU's member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. The big whoop for the Washington Update podcast this week is the reintroduction of NAHU's priority legislative issues for the new Congress. We'll get into more detail throughout the podcast, but can you give a quick rundown of the recent bills that have been reintroduced?
Sure. So at CAP conference, we kept telling you we were going to get all these bills introduced, but we didn't have bill numbers, but we actually got bill numbers now.
So a lot of what we were waiting for introduction on were some companion bills on repealing the Cadillac tax and for a delay on the HIT tax. And we talked to you all about the importance of the timing of those, and we'll get into that in just a minute. But recently, we've also seen introduction of bills on reinsurance for $10 billion worth of funding for reinsurance plans. This is, again, something else that was one of our priorities during Capitol Conference. And we're also very near to seeing the bipartisan bill introduced on surprise billing.
And we also got a bill on observation status, which many of you spoke about as I read through your comments, and we really appreciate that you brought that up in your visits.
NAHU activated Operation Shout last week to increase support of the delay of the health insurance tax for another 2 years, and this week our coalition sent a letter to congressional leadership urging them to include a continued suspension of the tax in their upcoming tax extenders package or other must-pass legislation, and before the tax is factored into premium rate review that will begin in the next several weeks. What is the outlook on this, and why are we pushing for another delay now instead of repeal?
Last year, we had a delay of the tax, and premiums were relatively flat. And it was in large part due thanks to the stability in the market that we got from having a delay of the HIT tax. And so I told many members, if you voted for that, take credit for it. And we are seeking another delay again in 20 to keep rates again stable for another 2 years. There is an urgency to this, though, because carriers are formulating rates very soon, and sooner is better than later. It's hard to say if they will actually take it up, and that's why your participation in Operation Shout to encourage members to co-sponsor the bill is critically important so that it rises above other legislative priorities in the Congress for action.
And we owe you all a big thank you for this. When you were here with us in D.C., we had the bill introduced on the Senate side for a delay on the HIT and needed just a little bit more of a push on the House side to be able to have a House bill introduced, which we now have, which is why we've sent that Operation Shout out. So a big thank you to all of you who messaged on this while you were here for Capitol Conference and making sure that we were able to get this bill introduced in the House and on its way to hopefully getting passed this year. As John mentioned, timing is everything with this bill. We're in a year where there's a moratorium on the implementation of the HIT tax. And if we do not pass this bill by the end of 2019, we will go into 2020 with the HIT tax being implemented.
NAHU also activated Operation Shout in support of a full repeal of the Cadillac tax. The House bill now has the support of more than 240 members of Congress and is quickly approaching the milestone of 290 co-sponsors. What is the significance of this in terms of our efforts to get this legislation passed?
So thanks to the Problem Solvers Caucus, which is a bipartisan caucus of Democrats and Republicans evenly divided, who have come together on a number of issues, including this one, got a rules package passed in the beginning of this Congress that said that any bill that reached 290 co-sponsors threshold could go to the floor for a vote. And we are at, you mentioned, 240 plus, and we may be the first test case to see what happens actually when you hit 290.
And with that, just kind of keeping in mind with the math and the rules, since this is a new rule for this Congress, that if a bill gets to that 290 co-sponsor point, it can go to the House floor for a vote. At that point, it will only need 218 votes in favor of it. It only needs a simple majority to pass the House and go to the Senate. So oftentimes we see folks co-sponsor bills that maybe they won't end up actually signing on to and voting in favor of for a number of different reasons. But here, if we got to that 290, we would have a nice cushion to really ensure that we would have 218 to vote in favor of this and get it over to the Senate.
And with a companion bill in the Senate, if we really tested this and got 290 and got a vote, I really feel confident that the Senate would pass it too, and it would be passed.
And keep in mind, a couple of years ago, we did have a bill in the Senate that had 90 co-sponsors on it to repeal the Cadillac tax. We do have a few seats that have changed in the Senate since that congressional session and that vote. But I do think that we have a majority there to get to 60 votes if we need to, if we can get this started off on the House side. We also are very appreciative to many of you. We sent a stakeholder letter to members of Congress just expressing the deep concern that we have about the Cadillac tax and what it means to the American consumer. And NEHU signed on along with our coalition and a number of our partners here in DC. But we also reached out to many of you and had your state chapter sign on. And we worked with your state legislative chairs to do this. So we had over 50 chapters that signed on, both state and local NEHU chapters, as well as, again, ourselves. So it was a great show of support of what we really need to be done here with the repeal of the Cadillac tax.
NEHU will next activate Operation Shout for legislation that was introduced this week that would finally fix Medicare's two-midnight policy for patients placed on observation status. John, can you shed some light on this legislation for the senior moment of the week?
I'd be glad to, and we're very pleased to again have bipartisan, bicameral legislation to address this issue. So many of you know or have had experience with clients who were in the hospital, and of course, to go to skilled nursing, you need a 3-day stay. But if you're placed on observation, that doesn't count towards the 3-day stay. And furthermore, some people have had that changed after the fact. But here's another twist, and which is kind of interesting in talking about this with members of Congress as they are embroiled right now on drug pricing and drug issues. And that is that if you're in observation status, it doesn't count, the oral drugs don't count under Part A, and you can't bill it under Part D because only pharmacies can bill under that. And so you could incur a very deep hole in out-of-pocket expenses. And so it's just another sort of twist to this issue of observation status that might help us lobby more effectively on the issue.
Another major piece of legislation that was recently introduced was the House Medicare for All bill with 106 co-sponsors, fewer than in the last session of Congress, despite Democrats now holding more than 36 more seats. How is NEHU continuing to shape the conversation on this issue?
We are continuing to work with our coalition partners, the Partnership for America's Healthcare Future, on opposing Medicare for All in all of its forms. So that means Medicare buy-in, the Medicare Part X or Part E that you may have heard of, also any type of public option that would go along with a Medicare for All plan, all kind of fits into the box that we are trying to advocate against. We have sent several letters to the Hill on this. In fact, we sent over 10,000 messages advocating against Medicare for All to members of Congress just last month. So we are really using the opportunity, although this bill has been introduced, and is being messaged on for those that are supporting it. We are using this as an opportunity to get our message out about the dangers of Medicare for All, about the limitations that it will have on choice and plan and choice in doctors and your what type of coverage you have. Also, the cost that it will bring. None of the bills talk about what exactly the cost will be. We have estimates from the Congressional Budget Office on how much it could increase taxes. But a lot of times I get questions when I'm around the country of, well, how much is it going to cost in premiums and things like that? And that really is a piece that is missing. A lot of these bills that we're seeing coming out are very short. They're not the thousands of pages that we've seen with most healthcare bills that are looking to restructure the American healthcare system. And so there's a lot missing, including that finance piece. So we're working to point out some of these issues with the bills, but also just in general to shape the conversation on focusing on lowering the cost of care and lowering the cost of health insurance in this country instead of just solely focusing on opposing Medicare for All.
But an effective message on this is really describing it as single payer. They've done a lot of polling on this, and people think of Medicare for All as, oh, maybe that's okay. But when you say this is government-run healthcare, single payer, that triggers a different response. I think also the fact that there's no choice, right? You have government-mandated coverage for everyone. And as far as the premium is concerned, it's reflected in increases in taxes.
This week on the Hill, House Energy and Commerce Committee Chairman Frank Pallone announced a new investigation into insurers who operate short-term plans, including looking at broker compensation. What are some concerns NAHU has with this, and what should agents and brokers be watching for as this investigation unfolds?
Chairman Pallone is very busy this week, along with the rest of the members of the House E&C Committee. With this specific hearing and looking at the short-term plans, they were investigating the fact that oftentimes these short-term plans, because they are often different carriers than a traditional health insurance carrier, not the names that we're used to seeing for group and individual plans that offer your plan base, the short-term plans are often different companies that because of their financial structure and because there are not the same limitations on short-term plans as there are on traditional plans under the ACA, oftentimes these carriers are able to pay more in commissions for a short-term plan. What the folks on the E&C committee are concerned about is whether agents are steering consumers into short-term plans that don't have as much coverage, are not required to cover the essential health benefits, and whether agents are doing this because there is a more robust commission schedule typically for short-term plans compared to individual plans, which is really what if someone's going into a short-term plan, it's really making the choice between whether they're eligible to enroll in an individual plan or going into a short-term plan. We, of course, have always said that there is a place for short-term plans. There's a market that they serve. They should be available for use to help someone who has a gap in health insurance coverage, but not something that should be used in place of an individual plan. So we'll be working alongside Chairman Pallone and helping to make sure that we clarify that agents are really trying to make sure that they're doing the best for their clients. What agents and brokers should be watching for as this investigation unfolds is really some of these conversations about exactly that phrasing, the choice of words. We're purposeful about steering clients into these plans for commissions. So I think brokers need to be very careful when they're looking at the plan options for their clients. We know that you work in the best interest of your clients and want to make sure that they're in the plan that best suits their needs, both for their health life and finances, but also just be aware that these conversations are taking place. And what Pallone would really like to see is the rule with the short-term plans that enabled them to be sold for up to 364 days and renewable for up to 36 months. He would really like to see that rule rescinded and back to the three-month structure that it was under President Obama. He's also busy working with his committee trying to make sure that there are protections in place for pre-existing conditions, upholding the rules regarding plans covering all of the essential health benefits. And if he's not able to shorten the length of time for the short-term plans, making sure that all plans have coverage of the EHBs. And then he'd also like to prevent some of the association health plans from moving forward. Although, as we know, many states have already seen AHPs coming into fruition. So he has a lot on his plate that he's looking to work with.
We've also reminded the chairman that book of business that you have has value and it's long-term proposition. It's not, so steering wouldn't benefit the agent when you think about that long-term relationship.
Looking at the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue, the Trump administration recently released a proposed rule to expand the sale of health insurance across state lines, expanding upon the executive order issued in October 2017. What should agents and brokers be aware of with this proposed rule?
This proposed rule didn't come as a big surprise, but it was a bit unexpected. So we heard throughout the president's campaign about opening up sale across state lines. We had the two executive orders asking agencies to do everything that they could in their power to be able to control costs, increase choice and competition in the market, and access to healthcare. What we saw with the Association Health Plan final rule that came out just a few months ago and is being implemented now was the ability of these associations to form with the sole purpose of providing health insurance, as long as they provided one other service. And the way that they were designed would enable the sale of insurance across state lines, technically, depending on any state provisions that were put in place by the state insurance commissioners. So a lot of people thought that checked the box. That was how this administration was going to say they were allowing the sale of insurance across state lines and they were going to move on, because this isn't a really popular idea outside of a certain circle. But we did see recently this request for information and proposed rule on the sale of health insurance across state lines. And it's asking a lot of questions about how this would work. Our response is going to raise a lot of questions about this because of the way that the state health insurance markets are structured and the way that the law is structured that provides that the state insurance commissioners have control over the plans that are sold within their borders and are able to regulate those. We don't really see this coming as something that's going to be very popular amongst the states. There is a lot of concern about how a plan will be domiciled. If you are in Connecticut and you buy a plan in California, how is that going to work? Which rules are going to regulate the plan? How are networks going to be devised? All of these things. Another thing that the proposed rule talks about is this state compact. And this was something that was put together in the ACA that allowed for states to join this state compact. And by doing so, they could then make an agreement to sell insurance across state lines as long as they were part of that compact. To date, there are four states that have joined this state compact. However, there are zero plans that are being sold across state lines through this compact. And this has been around for quite some time. So I think it's very telling that even though there is this ability for states to be able to go ahead and do this and sell across state lines, and some states have said, yeah, sure, I think I'd be open to this as long as we're coming together and agreeing on some rules of the game, we still have not seen anyone take this up, and we haven't seen any carriers pushing to try to sell within those four states that are part of the compact. So we will be submitting comments and asking a lot of questions about how they think their proposal could possibly improve upon that state compact idea and entice more states to come in, and then what the rules of the game will be if we do in fact see more states coming together through the compact.
And for those of you who live in Georgia, know well that before the ACA, you passed legislation in your state to allow this, and you built it, and no carriers came. So I don't think the situation's changed, because it's always still about how many people can you bring to the table? What's your provider network like?
Each state has so many different elements that goes into their marketplace that I think it's very difficult for another state to try to analyze that market and be able to join together to even try to participate in these compacts. And for carriers, a lot of carriers are very regional. And so the thought for them after they have attempted to master the market that they're in, which is ever changing, to then go and look at another region or area of the country that is going to be completely different when we look at the makeup of the type of people who live there and the health conditions and things like that. This is all just takes into account a lot more working pieces than just selling across state lines.
The Trump administration also released their fiscal year 2020 budget request this week. What are some of the top items that NAHU is watching as the budget battles begin? Just weeks after the longest government shutdown in U.S. history that came from the last budget battle.
The most important thing to remember about this budget proposal and this budget battle is that this is still Trump's request, President Trump's request to Congress for his budget. So this is in no way final. The battle will continue to, and healthcare will be a part of it. We all know that there will be some other aspects, infrastructure, immigration, other pieces that will take a lot of oxygen out of the room when they're talking about the budget. But when we're looking at this in regards to healthcare, they are looking to nearly $1.25 trillion in mandatory savings from public health programs, largely targeting Medicare and Medicaid. So those are some areas that we are looking at, making sure that where they're trying to make these savings, we're not also putting forth proposals that could possibly harm the market. Some of the ideas that are attached to that $1.25 trillion in savings in those markets were core tenets of the failed healthcare reform proposals that the Republicans put forth last Congress. So we want to make sure that we're really combing through that and we're not harming those beneficiaries in those markets and Medicaid and Medicare.
No presidential budget's ever been passed in total. It's always been, it's Congress's prerogative. It's just a wish list or aspirational of what they would like to do. And that's what we're really combing the various provisions for, to kind of see where the point of emphasis is going to be.
And it is very aspirational. For example, this budget, and similar to the previous budget from the Trump administration, is based on the assumption that the ACA was going to be fully repealed. So in the last congressional session, when Republicans had the majority in both the House and the Senate, the Trump administration put together their budget assuming that the ACA was going to be repealed and that we would be in a different healthcare system. The budget that they've put together this week that we've seen also makes that same assumption. But I think that we can all agree that with Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House, we're not going to see a repeal of the ACA. So even looking at some of the basics of how the budget is put together, there are already some areas of concern that need to be adjusted since we are going to be in a budget world where the ACA still exists for the time being. We were also particularly pleased to see the prioritization of expansion of access to health savings accounts. This would allow Medicare beneficiaries the ability to contribute to HSAs if they are covered by a high deductible health plan. There were some other areas that NAHU supported that were in the proposed changes, including funding towards ACA cost sharing reduction payments, reducing the grace period for marketplace premiums, something that we talked a lot about during Capital Conference, adding a new minimum required contribution for premium tax credits, and implementing tort reform. So these are all some of the pieces, as John was saying, that we're going to comb through and keep an eye on as this works through Congress and this budget request and suggestion that is sent from President Trump to Congress goes through the budget battle that we'll be watching over the next few weeks.
It's now time for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hours Toast of the Week. What are we toasting to this week?
So as a ledge guy, I want to propose a toast to bipartisan, bicameral bills on NAHU priorities.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for this week's installment of the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts, or to join as a member of NAHU, visit nahu.org.